Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby, your weekly dose of health, wealth, and everything else.
What does it take to be a true trailblazer in business and in life? We're going to answer that question today. Hey, everybody, welcome to A Bit of Insight. I'm Lisa Mosby, your host. Of course, I'm here every week. My guest today has climbed both corporate mountains and literal ones, from 15 years at Apple as a leader in global marketing to hiking the entire 2,200-mile Appalachian Trail, raising nearly $100,000 for Parkinson's research, Susan Oaten. No, I always say it wrong, you guys. She has this analogy and we're going to change it. It's Susan Oaten. There we go. Susan Oaten. She embodies what it means to lead with grit, vision, heart. Her journey is proof that leadership isn't just about the boardroom. It's about creating legacy and building community, walking the talk. Mile by mile. Susan's leadership path has taken her from CMO to COO and even CEO in each of these roles, mentoring entrepreneurs and founders worldwide. At Apple, she launched social media in 25 languages and guided brands that were distributed into 140 countries. This lady is a powerhouse. Welcome, Susan. Thanks for being with me.
I'm sorry, that wasn't at Apple. That was at an agriculture company called AGCO.
Oh, beautiful. AGCO. And then you were at Apple for 15 years and you were at AGCO?
AGCO, yep. Yeah. So that was where social media was launched and 140 countries, 25 languages. Yep.
That is amazing. Yeah. And so tell us about how, you know, what does trailblazing mean to you? Like, how would you define that word?
Well, I always kind of wondered about it, you know, trailblazer, what does that mean? And then there's even a vehicle called a trailblazer. And what does that mean? And I got the answer when I hiked the Appalachian Trail, because there's what they call blazes, white marks on the trees to guide you along the route. And some places it's a very well-worn trail, but some places it's not. So you're always looking for the blazes on the trees. And the idea is that if you're at a blaze, you can see the next blaze. But sometimes not. But mostly it was really well marked and volunteers take care of it along the trail. So to be a trailblazer, I think I used to think it was, oh, you're just out there, going to it, right? You're blazing the trail, you know, get out of my way. You know, you could catch on fire if you're not careful. But I think instead now I've learned it's looking ahead. It's looking for guidance. It's looking for those marks that wiser people have put in place, and kind and gentle people make sure that those blazes are visible hundreds of years after they're originally painted on the trees. So it's really taken on a whole new definition for me.
It's part of that leadership process, right? There was somebody there before and you have mentoring in your background. The lessons that you learned from Apple and it's AGCO.
AGCO.
One more time.
AGCO, like AGCO, agriculture.
Thank you. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Apple and AGCO lessons. How do you tie, let's just tie those two together really quick, where, you know, you're the things that you were doing, 140 countries, 25 languages, that's blazing a trail. I mean, the people haven't been there before. How did you leave those signposts along the way for the people that came after you? What did that look like when you're with your business experience? How did you tie that together from what you later did in life walking that trail?
Right. Well, it's interesting because in all three instances, technology was involved. I mean, of course, you would expect that at Apple, right? You know, technology leader. And then at AGCO, I used things like Google Translate to help with the 25 languages. It was pretty new at the time, so not really spectacular, but kind of like AI, actually, that was getting better the more you used it. And because we didn't have really an easy, efficient way to translate really dynamic content, because you're posting blog posts and social media and all that's feed into the website, and you have to have translation automated. So technology played a big role there. And even on the Appalachian Trail, we kept It technology light, literally, as much as we could, because everything you need, you carry on your back for that 2,200 miles. So every ounce had to be justified and warranted. But one thing that we made sure we had was a battery pack so we could keep electronics charged. But I kept my phone in either off or in airplane mode, so it wasn't constantly searching for connection and therefore deleting the battery. Our daughter, we'll talk about her, I think, in a little bit, but she needed to have her technology on because she was our trailblazer. She was going first. She was watching the trail. She was watching crowdsourced comments on an app to make sure that we were staying where it was safe. We were on a safe trail. We knew where water was, kind of the basics of life on the trail. And then we had to have an emergency communication device because you don't go walking in the woods away from civilization for 2,200 miles, where you only have connection on the trail for less than a third of the time. We needed something we could communicate with if we had an emergency. And we never deployed it in the emergency mode, but it was satellite communications, not based on GPS. It had to stay charged, though, to send the messages. And every night we would send a pre-programmed message to a group of friends and family. And there were two messages that we had saved, and we chose one or the other, or our daughter did. She always sent it. And it was my job to remind her, did you send the message? Because one was, we're at camp, we're safe. The other one is, we're in town, we're safe. And then they could tell where we were because of the GPS coordinates that the satellite data provided. So they knew how we had progressed from the night before. And then if we had an emergency, they could at least tell the rescuers where we were the night before. So it limited the search area because we
Sure.
did 14 and a quarter miles a day. So if you use the average, you could start from our night before spot and look 14 and a quarter miles, hopefully in the right direction of the trail, but you never know. So,
Yeah. The tools and the technology. Staying with the leadership principles on business, or bringing it back, CEO, CMO, COO, different seats at the table. How is leadership different from those different seats at the table?
Yeah. Well, I think the big part of it is the amount of responsibility. And it seems to me like the higher you go, like CMO is probably my first love because that's my background. That's, what my passion is and things like that. And in the national role, or the global role, like AGCO was, I got to share and guide marketing, worldwide. But guide is really the operative word there. These were brilliant marketers marketing their brands in all these different countries. And the way we did it was kind of to stand up and communicate centers of excellence or standards, that kind of we wanted to have as a guidepost, but a guidepost, not a barbed wire fence, So
Yeah.
they still had autonomy to be able to speak in their voice, their brands, promise and things like that, because we wanted it to be authentic and true to the country that it was distributed in. And then I think the other thing that's different is it's almost the higher you go, like CEO, you really have to listen and guide and coach. You're up there and guess the buck stops with the CEO, but I think the better, healthier community of supporting each other at work is to listen and take feedback. And in some things, I wasn't the right person to lead an initiative. I needed somebody who was, smarter and wiser than I, and then to relinquish control of that and to say, you take this project or this is your responsibility. I want you to check in with me. And if it has to do with money, I'm the one that approves the checks and stuff like that. But you're smarter, you're better at this. And to be able to recognize that, I think is really important.
Putting people in the right roles, the right positions, and leading them, letting them have agency, letting them have the control, and letting go of control, trusting the people that you're surrounded with. And I wanted to go there because that's a big part of this experience on the trail. You were the elder, but your daughter was the leader and relinquishing control. I'm the mother. I want to mother her. I want to take care of her. But her experience, the roles kind of started to reverse. And then you talked a little bit about the tools that you have. Who's making the decisions? Who's taking the actions? How are we coming together to communicate to make sure everybody's needs are met? It's so similar. It's so similar. Here you are in the business world, strong, powerful leader. Leadership, and here you are on the trail, strong, powerful member of the team to make sure that we reach our destination. So there are times in our life when we're leaders and followers. Tell me about that experience. Was it difficult to relinquish control and trust in her that you were going in the right directions?
Well, it wasn't that way at the beginning. I mean, of course, strong woman, right? You're gonna take the lead. And but it didn't really go that well at the beginning. It was hard. The other part of it was, and this speaks to getting to know your team, getting to understand them, what's important to them, what's their process, what's their thinking. I mean, she's my daughter, but we'd been apart for 9 years. 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of veterinarian school, and then 1 year as a veterinarian resident. And then she came home, interviewed for a job, accepted a job, and said, this was July when she got done with her residency. And then she said, great, thank you. I'm so excited. I'll see you in January. So we left July 14th and got back, or we finished the trail December 22nd, I think it was. And the company that she works for was so excited for her. They, introduced her as their new veterinarian and in the backstory and why you won't see her for a few months and all that. Just so supportive, and included her in another employee communication, later on down the trail. Hey, Greta's doing fine. And so that was really cool. But so that just getting to know each other after 9 years, and now we're sleeping literally 9 inches apart. In our carried tent and sleeping bags, and it was huge. Now the reason why she was the better leader is not only is she 6 foot tall and I'm like barely 5'4". She's a two sport Division One collegiate athlete. She'd done a ton of hiking. She's an Ironman. She's just really uber athletic, and I'm not. I grew up on a farm. My sport was feeding the cows. There was no time to go to have an after school activity. So, like sports or whatever. So it quickly was evident that I was not the best leader for the team. And she had done so much more research and talked to so many people, and she was clearly the best leader. Then I had to switch my role to being support. And if there was ever something that was like, okay, what do you want to do here, mom? I'm like, oh crap, now I got to make a decision. I'm not, and then I'd ask questions and try to get her to not make the decision. It was nice that we were collaborating, but I didn't have all the information to make the decision. And it was great because we fell into this rhythm because I was the gating factor on how far and how fast we could go every day. And I fell every single day without exception. Like we tried to, and we actually defined a fall. So just a hand touching the ground is not a fall, but if your butt touches the ground, that's a fall. And if two hands hit, have to touch the ground, that's a fall. So the trail is very rugged, and so it was up to me to determine how far we were going to go. And at the beginning of the day, we'd set our goal. And as the afternoon wound down, then we watched like how far we had to go. Big key question, what's the elevation up and down? Because toward the end, the up killed my hips and glutes, and the downs killed my knees because I had IT band issues. I don't know if you remember buns of steel. I know what that means now. And your IT band doesn't stretch. So if you don't stretch a ton, you have to stretch the tissue that the IT band attaches to. Otherwise, you're just like, it's like having a cramp in your knee or your glute or your hip that doesn't go away. And it was extremely painful. So, and at that point, by the time I figured out what was going on, it was kind of too late. So I tried to stretch, but you got to go, you got to move. And it's that way in life and in leadership. Okay, something's not going right. Figure it out, but keep going, you know? And it's almost like figure it out along the way. Or ask someone who's smarter than you, ask someone who's been through it before, ask someone who has the experience, which on the trail was my daughter. So, it was an interesting experience. It was tough at the beginning, but once I figured out what was going on, I'm like, oh, be quiet, take a back seat, maybe not in the back of the bus. Don't pout. Don't go back way back there. But you've identified someone that's better at me in this situation. And it's that way in leadership. Like, just because you're the boss or the division leader or the supervisor doesn't mean that you can't delegate. In fact, that's really, to me, a sign of very smart leadership, that they've identified, okay, I'm good at this, but you know what? That guy, that gal, they're so much better at this. And maybe they don't have the experience, but you know, I can nurture and I can coach and I can help them from the corporate perspective, but they're doing it really, really, really well. And it's smart to take advantage of that ability, that knowledge, that, you know, passion that they have. It improves engagement of employees. That's the number one problem facing companies today, is employee engagement. You know, I think it started with COVID, and you know, we haven't fixed it yet. We're largely back in the office, but that doesn't mean we know how to engage employees. I think we got lazy during COVID, and it's a conscious effort to figure out how to integrate people into, you know, that team effort and collaboration, because not everybody knows everything. One of my favorite sayings is, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And I follow it up with, I know a lot of people. So, which kind of infers I don't know that much, but I know who to go ask.
It's not that we don't know that much, but we don't know it all. You know, I'm very much I'm a jack of all trades. I'm not a master of a trade. You know, I've been in sales and motivational speaking and training for my whole life. So I've had to accumulate a lot of data and information and disseminate in a simple way for people to understand. But that doesn't mean I'm a master at any of those things. But I am a master of consuming information. Some people say I'm a master at speaking, having conversations, but we're a jack of all trades. Sometimes a leader is a jack of all trades. They know the exactly. That was one of my favorite sayings as well. I don't know. I think it may have come from Henry Ford because he said, "I don't have to know everything. I just need to know the people that know everything." And then we inspire, lead, and motivate them to help us achieve what it is that we want to achieve.
That's
So
really
I
well.
love it.
I like that.
So we don't have to have all the answers, but if we put people in the right, another book, seats on the bus, you know, what seats on the bus are the people in? Are they in the right seats on the bus? Do we have the right person driving it? Do we have the right people in the front seat watching where we're going and keeping an eye on the vision? So all of those things make a difference in how successful we are when we empower people to do what it is that they do best. And I know that there was a point on this trail that you were wearing a helmet, and you said I fell every day. And I'd love, you know, we have roadblocks in life. Yeah, there's stumbling blocks. There's major roadblocks in life, as you're going to share with us here in a minute. They can stop us, or we can figure out how to deal with those roadblocks, get over them, go around them, go through them, whatever we need to do. Talk to me about the roadblocks you experienced on the Appalachian Trail.
Well, one of the things that was really interesting was our daughter was a purist. She wanted to go every single step of the trail. And sometimes, like at night, there's shelters along the trail, and they're like three-sided kind of huts, just a wooden floor, lots of mice, because people drop their food there as they're having dinner and stuff. And a lot of times, you know, if the trail went this way and the shelter was over here, then there was a spur trail that went to the shelter and then went back to the trail. Well, we'd go to the shelter, but my daughter wouldn't go back to the trail that way, because then she would have missed this section of trail. So she would always go back and pick up where we got off the trail. And you know, I'm the good little follower, and I'm doing that for a while. And then kind of toward the end, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna save that, you know, those 10,000
Extra.
steps or whatever. Yeah. And I'll wait for you and meet you down here. So that was really interesting kind of concept. But the roadblocks were like every step of the way. And there was parts of the trail where you couldn't even step without consciously thinking where you're going to put your foot. And when we started out, it was really, we went backwards. We started north and went south because we started so late in July. And they closed the mountain where the trail starts when it snows because it's up northern Maine. So it gets a lot of snow. And people have gotten lost and died on the mountain. So they do guided trails hikes in the winter up there, but you can't. The park is closed unless you do a guided hike. So anyway, we started in July and headed south. So we were going against traffic. And because we started so late, people were actually finishing the trail by the time we started. So, and up north, it's really wooded. It's beautiful. But roots means, or trees means roots. And along the trail, because it's been worn down over time, the roots are very exposed. So day 18 was my first fall. No helmet at this point. And I tripped on a root, hit my head on the root. I think it's healed up very nicely. But you can kind of see a divot in my head still. But 9 stitches. And we were, let's see, 3.5 miles to where the trail crossed the road. So I had to walk out with, a head wound. And yeah. But what was so amazing about that fall, we hadn't seen anybody all day. It was 1:30 in the afternoon. Beautiful August, early August day. And I sat up, I fell, I hit my head on the road. Your head makes a really weird sound, kind of echoey in there. And then I immediately screamed for our daughter, who was hiking behind me at that point. I sat up, and remember, I hadn't seen anybody all day. Beautiful day. At my side appear two men. And the one says to the other one, "Joe, when I fell last week? I think I have some of those steery st strips left. Can you dig them out of my backpack and I'll help the lady up and make sure she's, okay." And by that time, our daughter got there. Oh, and then he said, "Oh, and one of those big waterproof bandages that keeps the blood in? Grab one of those too." And so, I mean, right there, they pulled them out. By that time, our daughter was there. She said, "I'm a veterinarian. I'll tape her up here." And put the buff back on my head because I was sweating a lot. It was August, it was a little warm. And we were on our way. And my one huge regret of the trail, I think it's my only regret, is I didn't ask them to turn around to see the angel wings on their backs. Because I mean, that was absolutely a miracle, absolute miracle. And people that help hikers are called, this is a standard term, I didn't make this up, trail angels. And here, our first really crisis, and we have trail angels appearing at our side, without missing a beat, helped us. And then they're like, "Okay, you guys good?" And off they went, and we got to the road, didn't even have our thumbs out to hitchhike, and a car stopped. Didn't even have our backpacks off. And usually when you're on the trail, you take your pack off as soon as you possibly can. And, the husband leans out the window, "You gals need some help." And they took us the hour, over an hour and 15 minutes to an ER. And they said, "Yeah, we go right by it. Jump in. You guys hungry? We'll stop at a gas station and get you some snacks." I mean, just like unbelievable. Wouldn't take a dime. When they stopped at the gas station, they, topped off and w wouldn't let us pay for the gas. Just like unbelievably kind, which speaks to the community along the trail. And then the second time I fell was in, they call it Rocksylvania on the trail because it's so rocky. And this is where you can't walk without figuring out where you're going to put your feet because they're standing up pointy rocks too. And there's a joke along the trail that the Boy Scouts in the area go out at night and take their rock files and sharpen them and make sure they're really, and they got it, and they're wiggly too. So like I'm trying to walk and like figure out where I'm going to put my foot and okay, is it safe? Can I lift my other foot up? And I misjudged one time and I knew I was going down. So I did the tightest tuck and roll you can do with a 35-pound backpack on your back. And because I didn't want to like poke an eye out or break my nose or smash my teeth. And so I got the top of my head and 10 staples, which is weird because it's literally a staple gun. And that was only 1.5 miles from the trail, but that head wound bled like crazy. So I'm walking on these rocks. I got a trekking pole in one hand to help balance, but it is gushing blood for the entire 1.5 miles. So I'm trying to put pressure on my head to stop the blood from running down my face. It was really, really challenging. But again, we got to the trail. There was someone there to give us a ride. Just the community that reached out to help was unbelievable. So
I don't
exciting.
even know how to respond to that. It's, yeah, amazing that one, those people were there, and two, that you didn't go into shock or panic seeing that much blood running down your face. Yeah. Well, and how did your daughter, she's a veterinarian, so she's probably used to blood, and she's gone through all of the training for that, but it's still your mom and she's still bleeding from the head. How was she calm? How did she handle you experiencing that?
She was. It was, I mean, both cuts weren't like just surface wounds. They were, deep enough that they were
Significant.
concerned. When I give presentations on the trail, I've taken out the pictures of my head wounds because they're pretty gross. I mean, this one especially was very gaping and, very wide, and she smushed them together and put Steri-Strips on, so that helped reduce the bleeding too. She was very calm. She took control. She was a perfect leader, calming me, thanking the people that helped us, giving instructions on what she needed. When we got to the ERs, no concussion either time. The second one, she asked the ER doc, so like, how long should she wait before she gets back on trail? Because this one was pretty,
10 staples.
And I've learned a medical term, remarkable. They call like int like yeah, yeah. He's like, yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So he's like pondering and thinking, and I mean, he was totally playing it up. He says, well, I'd wait an hour. It's like. But by the time it was afternoon when I fell, by the time we got to the ER, we weren't going to go back out on trail. We had to find a place
That
to
day.
stay. And it was a Monday, and this was post-COVID. And so a lot of the little towns along the trail were really having labor issues. So restaurants were all closed on Mondays. It was just a standard thing, and sometimes Tuesdays. And this was a Monday. But again, another miracle. Someone said, oh, at the hotel, they're like, oh, have you eaten? I know the restaurants aren't very open, but my friend works at the Chinese restaurant and they're always open. They're just like a half a mile up the road. I'll call them and because they're going to close soon, and a lot of times they'll save the leftovers for me, so I'll see if they can save the leftovers and you guys can go up there and pick it up. Just like, just amazing, amazing kindness. And she didn't have to, the ER doc offered to give us a ride, and we're like, well, we don't know where we're going, but that was sweet. He was coming off shift, and I mean, really, an ER doc who's probably been on a 12-hour shift is offering to give us a ride without even knowing where we need to go. That was just huge. And then we got a ride to the, I think it's the world's largest Dick's Sporting Goods, where we got a helmet. So, and my husband wanted me to get a hockey helmet. Our son's a big hockey player, and with a full metal cage, so it'd have a lot of protection. Those are so heavy. I mean, I seriously wanted to, comply with my husband's wishes that we go to Dick's to try it on, even though it's August. They had hockey helmets, and are so heavy. I have new respect for hockey players. I'm like, oh my gosh, you have to do a workout just to hold your head up. And but I found a lighter weight, hard plastic, like BMX helmet. So if you're, doing that crazy BMX bike riding. But I got a really lovely gash on the side of it. I'm pretty sure it would have been a third ER visit. So I kind of like, it's kind of one of the sweet memories of the trail, bittersweet memories. Someone said I should auction it off and put the money toward Parkinson's research. So I don't know. When I get over not having the helmet, but you never know when I'm going to go hike again. So it'll come in handy.
And you mentioned Parkinson's, so that was the inspiration behind all of this. When you set out, did you know it was going to take you 5, 5 and a half months to do the whole length of this?
We knew. Actually, we did it pretty fast. I think we really wanted to be home by Christmas, so that would have been 5 and a half months, a little bit more. We did a little bit less than that. The last week, the third hurricane was hitting the East Coast, so, and we were used to it because we'd endured two hurricanes already. And by the time it hits, inland, it's just a bad windstorm, lots of rain, and temperatures drop. So it's not like you're in the middle of, hurricane, but you get the aftermath. But we used to live in Georgia, and because the trail finishes in Georgia, we had a lot of friends that were coming out to cheer us in, and it was so sweet. And we didn't want Greta put out a social media post that, come in Christmas garb, extra brownie points if you bring your dog. And this is, we estimated when we were going to finish, and as we got closer, we kept updating. And but we didn't want them standing out in the cold and the wind in the rain. So we hustled up that last week and cut off I mean, it wasn't quite a full marathon a day, but we picked up our pace a lot. At the beginning we were, I think our first day we did 6 miles, and at the end we did do a over 33 mile day one day. But that was the day we saw wild ponies. And so it's like, I mean, you have this big obstacle in front of you, and then and not everybody would see. I mean, ponies were known to be in this state park, but you didn't always be blessed to see them. And God knew we needed a little pick me up. So we saw, let's see, it was a group of three and then a group of five. And we name all the animals, wild animals we saw along the trail. And the last five were adorable. And we called them John, Jacob, Jingle, Heimer, and Schmidt. They were so cute. And
Awesome.
yeah, and the group of three was a mom and dad and the baby. And I mean, just so sweet. And for wild ponies, they're not really scared of you. It's said in the summer when they will lick your skin to get salt if you're sweaty. They, will come that close. They didn't, it wasn't, they didn't do that to us, but I was okay with that.
Yeah, they're wild. They're still a wild animal.
Yeah.
Let's talk raising awareness for Parkinson's, which was the reason that you did all this. Raised nearly $100,000, and then you were honored by the Michael J. Fox Foundation's
So great.
for Rookie of the Year. Tell us about
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. It was great. Well, Greta had done a ton of activities, a couple marathons, an Ironman to raise money for Parkinson's. So, she was great at that. And,
We should say why Parkinson's? Why
oh, oh
Parkinson's?
yeah. Yeah, my husband was diagnosed when he was 51 and did great for probably the first 10, 12 years or so. But it's an accumulative disease. The obvious symptoms are the mobility issues, but it's a cognitive disorder. So, the brain, the ability to remember, or it's just it's really sad. And so we were aware that we were leaving him alone, but we had a good support network to help him while we were gone. Our son and his beautiful wife have lived close by, and they had him over for dinner and checked in on him. And we have what we call our dog's grandma, who's here today, and she hangs out and cook for him and stuff like that too. So that was good, and we would check in. And his responsibility was to do a dumb dad joke of the day at the end of every video. So 96 videos, he had to come up with, the jokes. And toward the end, Greta was, our daughter was helping to try to find these jokes. But we wanted to not only raise research funds, but awareness, because it's kind of an unknown disease or not r very well known. But more people seem to be being diagnosed with it too. So that's a bit of a challenge. And Michael J. Fox Foundation has just done an amazing job. They have a fundraiser gala, which I think anybody that's raised more than, I can't remember what the limit is, $30,000 or something like that, is invited out to New York, where they're recognized and applauded. And then they use that as kind of a conference to update people on where they're at on research and finding a cure and stuff like that. And so it was huge to have their support. And we've got really great coverage, because it's kind of a weird story to have an old lady hiking with, a super athlete. And I'm not a math person. Like, I don't have that part of my brain, but our son is. And so I had him validate the numbers because there's all these statistics on the trail, like how many people do it every year, or how many people attempt, and how many complete, and how many are women, and what age they are. And when you take all that data together, we estimate I'm one of less than 10 women my age that completed the trail. But then I get immediately humbled because somebody, a woman who's 80 years old, just completed the trail. You know, it is just like crazy that, you know, it's like, could I do that, you know, in a little more than 10 years? Could I do the trail? I don't know. I have a hard time mowing the lawn. So, but anyway, we really wanted to raise the awareness. And because we had a kind of an interesting story, again, it was Greta's idea, and she was our creative director and videographer, editor, light editor, as much as she could do on the trail. And then we had a wonderful, beautiful pro bono publisher that published the videos for us for free. 96 videos, you know, smushed all the clips together, added the soundtrack. Shout out to John Wolf from the Rally Company out of Pewaukee, Wisconsin. Just so blessed by him. There's no way we could have done that. And that was our number one awareness channel and communication channel. People would post comments, and you know, we'd encourage people to make donations in our video, and they'd say, "Hey, I donated. I'm so excited for you." And so it was really, really, really cool to have that opportunity. And we got a lot of comments from people that it was good, clean video. It was stuff that people enjoyed watching. They'd sit and watch with their kids. And we'd always do at least 2 days in one video, because we were 154 days on trail, but only 96 videos. So we tried to, you know, and we did some special videos like a gear video. And the Hikers Thanksgiving is a big celebration for people that are out on trail. So that was kind of a special thing, and our finish, and our, you know, just fun stuff like that. But it was a way for people to not only see what we were doing, hear our corny jokes, and we made up songs along the trail, especially when we entered a new state. You go through 14 states, I think it is, 14, 13, I can't remember now. And, so we come up with raps, and you know, we do cool stuff, and Ron would tell funny jokes, and so it was fun. And they felt like they could, you know, show their kids it. They could learn a little bit about, you know, diseases and how this is hard, and you know, so it was good conversation starters for families too. And I mean, total strangers reached out to us again and again and again, and said, go, keep, you know, keep going, don't stop. And I was talking to our daughter about this recently, and kind of bring it back to the business world. It was interesting. We thought of it as our job. And it's like in the morning you wake up and you don't go, well, sometimes maybe you do, but it's like, oh, gee, do I really like this job? Do I really want to go into work? Do I really want to do it? Well, we're out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and you get up. You know, usually we were both awake before the alarm went off, usually quite early. You know, we would time ourselves, how fast can we pack up and get going? We wouldn't eat right away. We wanted to like hit the trail and kind of break up the hiking. So we'd usually hike about an hour, hour and a half before we would stop and eat, and then you got a little rest. So I mean, we really had a process, but it was our job. We woke up, we packed up, we got going. You know, we started the day. And I don't, there wasn't a single time, and Greta said she didn't have this thought either, that, oh crap, we got to do it again. Oh, you know, I don't really want to do this. Can I just catch a ride home? You know, where's the closest road crossing? I'm done, you know. And even when I fell, and my husband was so sweet, Ron was like, well, I think you should take a break. You know, why don't you come home and I'll come out and, you know, hike for you and just, you know, keep your place with Greta, and Greta can keep going. And it's like, okay, first of all, you have Parkinson's, and don't think that's really a great idea. Don't think you could do it, you know, really. Way too challenging. Though the researchers now are looking at exercise and how the wonderful effects of exercise on mitigating the mobility issues of Parkinson's. So hindsight, he probably would have been okay, because doing that kind of rigorous, strenuous exercise is the kind of exercise you need to push off it produces the production of dopamine, or stimulates the production of dopamine, which is what causes the mobility issues, because those cells in the brain die off. So It probably would have been great. He probably would have done just great. So I don't know. Maybe hindsight, I should have let him do it for a while. But no, we started together. We were going to finish together. But he was at the end of cheer us in too. So he flew down from Minnesota to Georgia and clapped for us as we came in. It was great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Many of us don't get the chance to do something extraordinary, so outside of our comfort zone for such a long period of time. The level of commitment and focus and f endurance, the physical piece that and mental and physical pieces that you went through, coming off the trail. I would venture to guess it's similar to folks who, come out of the military or just did something monumental, went to the Olympics, won a gold medal. You come off and it's like, there's got to be a letdown, after the mountains are climbed, both business and life.
Yeah.
What does that feel like?
Oh, it was. And people along the trail talked to us about it and people would post about it. It is a definite thing that people can and do go into really deep, dark depression after the trail. Because how can you be that amount of time in God's glory and meeting these amazing, kind people? I mean, over 40 strangers helped us along the trail. I think we stayed in over 25 people's homes that we didn't know. And they just reached out to us and like, hurricanes are coming. Weather's bad. It's snowing. Temperature's dropping. You got to get off trail. We'll pick you up here, but you got to give us about an hour and a half notice because that's about how long it'll take us to get there, and invite us into their homes and cook us a meal. Give us a bed, a bed. The best ones were like, we each had our own bed. It was great. In our own rooms, that was even better. A hot shower. They did our laundry for us. They packed up snacks for us. They gave us Mountain Dews. It was like all that caffeine and sugar was much appreciated on the trail. And it didn't matter what you eat, you kept losing weight. So burn about 5,000 calories a day. But then you got to adjust to that. You're back. Now it's like, oh, I have a bed. I have a refrigerator. I don't have to get up and roll.
Community is different. The
Yes.
community is different
Yeah.
when you leave that. Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, what can we do next? Where can we go? Where can we hike? And every spring it happens again because that's when most people start the trail is early spring, like even February, if the weather is mild, because pe most people start in the south. So they start in Georgia. And as they hit rough weather and stuff like that, but at least it's warm temperatures and there's not ice and snow on the ground. The spring is hard because you see all these posts and friends of ours that are out on trail again and stuff like that. So it's yeah, the itch is still there. I don't know if the heart is willing. I don't know about the body. Yes.
So
Yeah.
what is next for you? Where are you headed now? What are
Oh.
you looking to do in the future?
Well, it's kind of a time of transition. We have closed down our logistics business. I'm not ready to retire yet. I love speaking and sharing about the trail, using the lessons from the trail, which I break down into you got to have the right tools. Oh, but tools aren't any good if you don't know how to use them. You need the right training. And then, most importantly, you got to have the right team. So, who's on your team? Who helps you as a leader? Solve those problems, figure out the tools, figure out how to train your people. Who's your guiding light? And I love speaking on the trail to speak about the miracles of God. I mean, certifiable, write them up, send them to the Pope, miracles that no way should a 66 plus year old woman be able to hike 2,200 miles enduring two ER worthy head injuries. And that's not counting all the other. I mean, I don't know if you can see it. Oh yeah, you can see it pretty good. I mean, the amount of scars and injuries I had just from, tree bites and falls on rocks and, it was brutal. And it just, I survived. I thrived. God was so good. I mean, but part of it is you're in this beauty and you can hear God's still small voice. He's so polite. He doesn't scream at you. He just, hey, have you thought about this? You have so much time to think, to ponder, to talk to God. It's just like, wow, what am I going to do when I get home? What's going to be different? You know, am I going to change things? How am I going to do that? You know, I'll be CEO again of our business. How do I do that? You know, how do I do that? They've been getting along fine without me, right? You
Yeah.
know, so there's just so many amazing lessons to learn from the trails. I love speaking about it, doing workshops on it, coaching leaders, you know, that whole employee engagement thing. I've done things for mental health counselors for their retreats. I mean, okay, not everybody can go hike 154 days, but what can you do for your
My
mental health?
last question for you is, what's one step that our listeners can take today to start trailblazing their own lives or their own business? Any, you know, where would people start?
Well, I think you nailed it with the title of this podcast episode. What's your mountain? What obstacle do you have to climb? What's in front of you? And then I would go, once you have identified that, and that's kind of hard, you know, because life's full of challenges, but what is the one that's holding you back or causing you to fall or, you know, sending you to the ER? I mean, these are real things that happen to people that have mountains that they're trying to climb. So once you know that, and that takes a lot of work, and it's not easy work. Usually, I think either a good friend or a counselor or somebody to help with that, you know, is a smart thing to do. But now you know your mountain. Now it could be creepy, depressing if you can't figure out how to conquer it, how to climb it, how to endure it. So that's the thing that then I turn to the trail and it's like, wow, I learned so much. You know, tools, training, and team apply to everything in life. Everything. I mean, do you really want to go it alone? You couldn't walk the trail with nothing on your back. Even people that are running the trail still are carrying a couple of basics, you know. So, I mean, or have friends that are dropping food and supplies for them. I mean, you got to have something. I mean, we learned what was really important. Toward the end, our packs were about 20 pounds. We didn't need to change into jammies at night. We didn't need that extra two pairs of socks. You know, one pair was doing it. You know, it might have gotten wet at night, but for some reason, take your socks off, put them in the bottom of your backpack, and they're dry in the morning. I don't know why. I have no idea. I don't know how that physics works, but it works.
I've
So as
learned
long
that with sleeping bags camping. Yeah, put it if you have wet stuff, put it on and crawl in your sleeping bag. By morning, you'll be dry.
It's
Yeah.
crazy. Yeah, I don't get that. But I mean, it's great. It's really great to, you know, have learned those lessons and now to be able to apply them. And I look forward to, you know, when our grandson is old enough to, you know, already I'm teaching him nature. When I'm over there babysitting, man, we are walking outside. He's in the stroller, but, you know, we're looking at the birds and we're looking at the trees and, you know, even the weeds are beautiful. I mean, there's,
With my great nieces and nephews too, I got in trouble from some of the moms. Don't teach the kids what things are good for medicine because they're telling kids at the playground. You're going to get them in trouble.
yeah.
Giving them those tools to survive in nature. You know,
Yeah.
we may have all the benefit of technology right now, but you never know. We've
Yeah.
lost so much of being in nature, of being able to take care of ourselves and survival in those spaces. So it's nice that you're sharing that and passing it forward.
Well, and I think, you know, it's really important to know where you do get your energy. Is it exploring nature? Not everybody, you know, is into that. You know, maybe it's learning, maybe it's crossword puzzles, maybe it's going to museums, maybe it's having coffee with a friend. Identify what your mountain is, but how are you going to conquer it? What path are you going to take? Look for those blazes, people that have gone before you that have marked the trail. You're probably not the first person on the planet. May feel like it, but to have these issues, you know, there's older, wiser, maybe not even older. I mean, my daughter, let's see, she turned 27 on the trail, and she was by far the wiser person, the better leader, by far. So just really important to be able to identify that. And then, you know, I'm a big process person, you know, put a plan in place. You know, once you've figured it out, now what are you going to do about it? You know, okay, just because you've identified doesn't mean that it's going to go away on its own. You know, the
I
devil
think
has
we'll
a
leave it. I think we'll leave it there. I think we'll leave it there. We'll wrap it up right here. Susan, thank you so much for being with me and sharing the story. It's a amazing insight, and I take chances, but I've never done something quite that risky. So who knows what the future holds, what age it'll be, but I hope we've inspired some people who've been thinking about it, or have a longing in their heart to go for it, whatever it is.
And if anybody's got questions, I mean, feel free to reach out and, I'll help give some insight if they need more information. I'd be happy
You'll
to
be able
do
to
that.
find all those links for her YouTube videos. There's 96 of them. Her connections on LinkedIn and being able to get in touch with her will all be in the show notes. So feel free to reach out. Susan Otten, she reminds us that trailblazing isn't just about reaching the summit, it's about who we become along the way. The other thing is the communities that lift us up as you go. Are you in community? Are you getting the support that you need from the people that are in your life, the people that you've chosen to surround yourself from? From a global perspective, what are the mountain trails that you want to take off after? What do you want to pursue in your life? Her story is proof that leadership and legacy are built step by step, choice by choice. And you are the one that gets to make that decision. Susan is inspiring you to climb your own mountains with courage, compassion, and community. So take that first step today. Make a decision, make a choice, and start pursuing whatever it is that lights your heart on fire. Come back next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate you being here. See ya.
Thanks for joining me on A Bit of Insight. To get more involved with our wellness community, grab a copy of my book, Live Well, Travel Far, or to explore our travel offerings, visit the website at insightcenterforwellness.com. And if today's episode gave you something to think about, leave a review and please share it with a friend. This is Lisa Mosby reminding you to live well, travel far, and always follow your insight.